Hey everybody, welcome to IndieQuest, the celebration of the indie and obscure. I am one of your hosts today, Josh, and I'm here with the Bellatro bro himself, Captain Drachma. How are you doing?
I had to pull myself away from that old Bellatro to come and speak to you fine gentlemen this evening, but it's an addiction, Josh. I know you spoke about it a couple episodes ago, and I know a lot of our listeners are playing it right now because I see them in the Discord, in a specific channel for Bellatro, talking about it all the time. But yeah, I'm happy to talk to you guys about a game other than Bellatro, even though I've spent so much time on it. But Steve's also here. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm not playing Bellatro at all, so I'm just happy for you guys. No, I'm doing quite good. You know, it's another wonderful Monday. It was a snow day here in Minnesota, which it actually has the opposite effect as an adult. As a kid, you love a good snow day. As an adult, it just means that my kid's daycare is closed, and so I have to stay home and I have to juggle work. But, you know, beautiful snowy winter wonderland. Coming down off a cold, so I'm a little froggy. People are going to get extra bassy indie discussion today. But otherwise, things are good. Things are good.
I usually think that our weather is not that far off. Like, yeah, you definitely get more snow up there than I do, but I'm not that far south. But it was 65 here today.
Yeah, so. You know what? Why don't you keep that in your boots, all right, buddy? No need to flex.
Surprise.
Not to turn this into here. Just like middle-aged guys shooting it about the weather, but like... It snowed, and then right after, it lightly drizzled for a couple hours. So by the time I got out there with the snowblower, it was so thick and caked and sticky that it kept clogging up the chute. So I'm sitting there having to constantly freaking choke the thing off and get my shovel in there and clear it out. And then I'd get another half of a driveway down, and it'd clog up again. Eventually, I just gave up and shoveled it. Like a chump for the second half of the driveway.
That is the worst thing about having to shovel a driveway, I feel like, is you have to time it out perfectly. Either it rains a little bit and everything's ice, or either myself or my wife need to go somewhere.
Yes.
And you drive over it, and it is the worst thing to shovel, driven over snow. You're like, you're good. And then, like, you can get in your head, I'm doing really good right now. I'm shoveling, and then... Kunk, like you hit a barricade of just ice. That's worst thing. Yes, seriously.
And it's almost impossible to get in there, you know, unless you get like a metal spade. But then now you're ripping up your driveway. Yes, and so seriously. You just leave it and it turns into two strips of ice. It's just terrible.
Yes.
Don't live in the Midwest.
Exactly.
I lived in Texas for 20 years, and now I'm in the PNW, so I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You get a strip of ice in your driveway, they shut the whole city down for 2 days.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, yeah. I started a new job, too, so that's been nice.
Hell yeah.
Been enjoying that. A little more positivity in my life. I feel like it's a really nice atmosphere where at my new place, so I'm digging that. That's what's going on with me this week, so.
Nice, yeah, man. I love that honeymoon period for a job where you're like, you're getting trained in, you're new, there's nothing but possibility, but very little responsibility for you at that time.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
I can relate to this, even though I've started a new job, so I've worked for the same company forever, but my wife just started a new job too, Josh, and she was freaking out on the first day. And I'm like, you know, it's just going to be like, you're going to go around and introduce yourself to everybody in the office and shake hands, and that's going to be the whole day. And she comes home all smiling and happy because, you know, it's like, you know, in her first 2 weeks was all training and watching stuff on a computer.
That's
awesome.
You're like, get out in the field, go help out with a technician. And I'm kind of doing some work, but it's kind of like, I'm kind of watching, and like I kind of know what I'm doing anyway, but it's a little different, so I'm kind of learning the ropes. It's good times, so.
Yeah, nice. Awesome.
So this is a show about indie games. I wanted to give a shout out at the top here. There was like, I don't know if you guys watched any of these. There was like three showcases this last week. Did you watch any of them? I didn't tell you guys about them or say, hey, you should watch them for the show. We didn't really prep anything, but I figured I'd give them a shout out if people want to check them out.
Yeah.
No, I haven't watched any of these.
Yeah. So Kind of Funny Games is made like, it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something. I watched it. It had a few good things in there. Like, I'm not going to be able to recall any of the games that were in any of these because there's just so much information. I enjoyed that. It was a good watch. The one I really liked was 6-1 Indies. They do this about twice a year, I think, like during spring and then summer. They might do a fall one as well, but this one was really well done, and there were some actual, like, good games in there. So I think you guys should check that one out for sure if you have an hour. I thought that one had some solid indie picks in there, like maybe some games we'll probably eventually bring. And then Future Game Showcase, which has a little bit of AAA mixed in, but lots of indies. So I say go watch these on your free time, throw them on the second monitor. You know, and what I do is I'll have it in the background and kind of like wish list stuff so I can kind of remember, you know, make a little list of games. So yeah, definitely has some interesting stuff and stuff that's going to be coming out within the next year, which is always nice.
Yeah. Shout out to 61indie.com, which is the website for that one. You go to their site and you just get a huge wall of all the games shown. You can click into any of them that look interesting to you, see more, read more. And they also have all like a bunch of developer interviews, just all in a giant panel right up front, right at the top. So very easy site to navigate if you want to check it out after the fact.
Yeah, everyone should go watch showcases. Don't be like me and just peruse Steam until you see something you like for, you know, 3 to 4-ish hours. And sometimes the game I play is like an hour long. So don't do that.
Yeah, there's a couple showcase of games in there. I was like, I got to check it out. There's one, there's like a wrestling game called, Wrestling with Emotions. And it's the art style's cool. It's kind of like a Ren and Stimpy looking almost. And it's a dating sim for wrestlers, which I was like, that's cool. That's pretty fun. Yeah, there's a couple other ones in there. Like, there's a rally car game that looks cool. There's like a couple of like, there's like a management boba simulator game that's kind of a roguelike that looks cool called Call of Boba. There's lots of really cool little things in there. So I say go check it out. Well, what we do on the show, this is just a regular episode. We're going to do what we always do is bring indie picks to the show. And what the show is really centered around is building this awesome, incredible list called the Quest Log, which has two sections to it. The main quest, which is an amazing game. Mostly like it's a game everybody's going to have a good time with. Easily recommendable. Check it out as soon as you possibly can. And then we got the side quest, which is still a great game. And maybe there's a couple of caveats. Maybe it's not quite as good. Maybe it doesn't have that special something, but it's definitely worth checking out. Every game we bring on the show is a recommendation. So, who wants to bring their indie pick first?
I'll go first today. I almost never go first, so I'm happy to take that on. So, you know, sometimes you want to bring the new hotness, right? Sometimes you got one right off the presses, still a little warm to the touch, you know, just came out of the dryer, and you're like, I'm about to wrap this video game hoodie over myself and just unwind. But sometimes you want to go back in time and you want to give a little bit of love to something that's been out for a while. You know, we always kick around these ideas. There's certain games that we kind of like talk around, like, you know, we've mentioned Hollow Knight on more episodes than I can count, and it's not on the quest log. And there's just certain games like that where it's like, sometimes you got to go back and you just got to fill a blank slot.
Yep.
So people that were paying attention, you know, the IQ OST, you know, maybe the Polykill listeners, they'll know what I'm about to bring. But I went back and I replayed for the first time in 8 years, Firewatch by Campo Santo. Now, before we get in, I need to know, it being a classic, what are my boys' experience with Firewatch? Where are you two coming from?
I have never played Firewatch. I can't remember. I think we maybe talked about it a little bit on the last episode. I bought it recently. I have it on Steam. I think I bought it on sale for like $2.
Yeah.
So it's sitting there cooking. I'm glad you brought it because, you know, now it's a prime candidate for a second opinion someday. So
yeah.
Fair.
I played it when it came out. When did it come out? 2015 or 16, something like that, right?
2016, yeah. It's almost a decade old.
Yeah, that's the last time I played it, so it's almost a decade old memories of it. That's what my experiences are, but I remember really enjoying it, so.
Nice. Yes, so it did. It came out February 9th, 2016. I consider this one you know, by 2016, we are no longer in kind of like the fledgling days of indie games, but this is, at least for the walking sim genre, one of the early big hits. I think Gone Home is what probably put that on the map, and then Firewatch was one of the first big ones that sort of like connected with people. And it's, I mean, you could say this about any walking sim where like what's the line between a walking sim and an adventure game comes down to how much, you know, interactivity puzzle solving there is. I would say there is a lot to do and see in Firewatch, but it is primarily focused on the sense of place, the being, the wandering around in the forest. And so for folks that are, a lot of folks will be familiar, but for the few that are not, Firewatch takes place in the Pacific Northwest. You start the game, you play as a guy named Henry, who has taken a job, he found it in the local newspaper, as a Firewatch, which is someone that, as the name implies, sits out in one of these national parks and is just looking to make sure there are no fires that have started. They're kind of like the warning system to try to prevent, you know, large-scale wildfires from spreading out. And there's campers and things like that. And so his job is to sit up in this tall lookout tower and, you know, first sign of smoke, radio it in. So it's a very simple, it's a very boring kind of not much to do type of job. And the reason he's taken this job, and this is set up that you get in the first 5-10 minutes of the game, so it's not really spoilers, but he's basically working through some like intense circumstances in his own life that are just kind of hard to deal with. So he has a wife, a partner who has like very early adult dementia. She's in like her late 40s or something. So it's like a particularly premature case. And it has progressed to the point where like she doesn't always recognize him. She's with her family now and her family doesn't really get along with him. And he's sort of like, you know, just wants to escape the situation. And he, you know, takes this job as a way of getting out and processing everything that he's going through. So that's the setup for his character and sort of his motivation. He very quickly meets the other, I would say, main character named Delilah. Delilah is someone that you never actually meet in the game, but you talk to her through walkie-talkie, through radio communication. And so she is another local Firewatch that you can see her Firewatch tower kind of off in the distance, but it's, you know, far enough away where you can't actually see her, of course. She's also like kind of his boss. She's sort of the senior Firewatch in the area. And so she has a good understanding of the job. She has a good understanding of kind of the lay of the land, the expectations, what you need to do, the day-to-day, all that sort of stuff. And so you set out, the game takes place. It has kind of this, it takes place over the course of a summer. As I mentioned, it actually splits up gameplay into like different days. And so, you know, you'll start on day one and then it'll go to day two. And you don't actually play through all like 90 days that would be mm-hmm. in a summer. It sort of jumps to key moments across time. So sometimes you'll go one day after the next, and sometimes you'll jump forward, you know, 2 weeks in time. And the days vary wildly in length because they vary wildly on what you're going to do. Obviously, the first couple are pretty long because the story is just starting to take hold. You know, you're getting introduced to the characters, the environment. There is sort of a central mystery that I don't really want to spoil for folks. But, like, you know, something happens out in this forest that is that Delilah and Henry are trying to figure out. And so you have, like, a lot of time to sort of digest that. But then other times it'll jump. And you'll just have like a 2-minute scene of you like fishing by a lakeside, and then it'll jump to the next day. So you really do get a wide variety of stuff that's going on. Pretty good mix of long and short days as you play through. And the actual gameplay, you could call it a gated exploration, I suppose. I mean, it is, it's walking simmy. You are very much, you know, just wandering through the forest. You know, certain situations will come over. It's like, oh, we got to go check out this creek, or we got to go check out this lake bed or this cave structure or something for whatever reason. And, you know, you can just, you know, climb over short rocks, walk around, navigate the forests. But you will, a couple times throughout the game, find equipment that will let you either explore new areas or navigate areas a little easier. It's like the first thing that you get is a rope and piton so that you can, you know, scale down steeper cliff sides that you wouldn't be able to just walk down yourself. And then you also get things like an axe to clear away thick brambles and stuff like that. And so even though you are in sort of one confined space the whole time, or not confined space, but one map the whole time, different pockets of it open up over time as you proceed through the game and, you know, you find this new equipment and things like that. The sort of star of the show, at least to my mind, is the actual forest. It's the environment that you're in. Mm-hmm. It is so believable as like a Pacific Northwest forest. There are so many different types of trees, vegetation, wildlife. It really does feel authentic to just hiking around, you know, some of those trails.
That's kind of what always got me with Firewatch. I've never played it, but I've seen plenty of screenshots. And even back when it came out, I guess maybe especially back when it came out, I associated indie with mostly pixel stuff, right? Not a lot of this kind of high fidelity, super polished, some might say AAA looking, right? So,
gorgeous.
It's just, it is. It is as good looking of a game as you could find in 2015, probably, right?
Oh,
so the fact that it is an indie, and I know it's just shorter game in general, right? Like it doesn't take too long to be compared to a big AAA game, but it looks fantastic. Amazing sunsets.
Yes, very much so. And they have a whole system in place for, you know, sort of volumetric lighting and time of day and different atmospheric and environmental effects that will happen to change kind of the gradient of the sky and the color of sunset and stuff like that. It is really quite fascinating how they do it. And yeah, there's so much care put into making like every area essentially like a vista. Like every time you come around a corner on a path or climb down a little cliffside and turn around, it's like that's another freaking, that could be a desktop wallpaper right there. So much so to the point where they know it. And relatively early-ish in the game, you find a disposable camera that has like 20 photos left on the roll of film. And you can take photos as you play through the game of like the different beautiful environments that you find. And then, you know, of course, they show up later. So they knew, like, man, this is just a good place to be in. This is like a good space to appreciate. And it's just, choice. Very, very good. And then, you know, exploring that forest is sort of your main driving force, and I think the most compelling thing. But the writing and the characters and the central mystery are also very well done. The interactions between Henry and Delilah are interesting because there's a little bit of like a build your own relationship. Like you can decide how to react to certain situations. Some of the writing staff came over from Telltale and had worked on The Walking Dead. So it has some of that Telltale conversational energy to it where, you know, you can respond kind of in the affirmative. You can respond more argumentatively to things. And you can not respond at all, and choosing not to say something is a decision, and that counts as what you would have said. And then all those little bits of conversation, little like jokes and little like decisions that you've made they'll come back around in the future. They'll impact your conversations, not in like big ways in like The Walking Dead. Like this is not the type of game where you fail a QTE or you say the wrong thing and one of the main characters dies. But like in a way that actual humans do. You know, they'll make jokes with each other and then later they'll kind of reference that joke as they're talking. And they won't do that if you didn't choose to make that joke earlier.
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's nice.
It's just a believable way that their relationship sort of becomes more intimate and like more human as you play through the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's awesome.
Again, I won't go too much into the details of like sort of the driving mystery, but the motivations to like explore and the way that they add sort of anxiety and tension into the world is it feels very authentic. It's the type of thing that like you can imagine yourself in that situation. You're like, man, I would react the exact same way. And this would be exactly how I felt. And this would make me anxious in the exact same way. And it's just, it's really interesting how how it feels so big and so small at the same time. It feels so intimate and also so like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
Right. Yeah. And isn't that first person view really helps sell it too, right? Like you really put yourself in his shoes and it's like, yeah, you just really feel like you're a part of it. It doesn't have that, from what I remember, it doesn't really have that horror movie thing. You're really like, don't go downstairs. Don't do that. No, no. And it actually feels like something a person would like legitimately like, this makes sense that he's doing this thing. You know, it's not like a, you know, why would you go in there? You know, there's a werewolf in the basement or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah, very much so. It's very humans making human decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the game.
Yeah.
Questions?
It has awesome music. We know that, though. We did listen to a track last episode, so the music's great.
It does have an incredible soundtrack. Very, like, acoustic guitar, you know, very kind of campfire vibe. But also, it's tense when it needs to be tense, and it's kind of like, there's drama when there needs to be.
I want to point out, since you brought it, Steve, it is perfectly on brand for our show, because I'm not saying that this was ever the point of our logo or our new logo, but it is very Firewatchy. Like, isn't it? It's perfect for, I mean, I'm looking at screenshots of Firewatch on the left, and then I look back over at you guys on the right, and I can see our logo because we have that for our Discord. But yeah, it's perfect. But I do want to know, Steve, for people who aren't a huge fan of a walking sim, would this appeal to people who aren't a fan of that genre? Because it can be very slow and plotting. That's kind of the genre that, not the genre, but one of the genres that I typically stray away from. So I guess that's my question. Is it slow? Do you have to enjoy taking in the scenery? Like for somebody who is impatient, I guess.
Not as much as other games in the genre. And I don't want to like be derogatory because some of my favorite games are walking sims. But I think when you think of a stereotypical walking sim, you think of like Gone Home. You think of walking through an environment and the only interactivity is like you looking at or maybe picking up and rotating objects. Firewatch is very conversational. It's very input-output. There's a lot to discover. There's a lot of little things, but also there is like a big driving mystery. There's character interactions. There's some interactivity. So it's more like a light adventure game.
Okay. Right. I will comment. I think that it's very good. The voice acting is really great. I think it's very natural. And I think that if you're into like, you know, short form fiction, you're probably going to enjoy it just because the conversation is so good between the two characters in the story. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I would plus that one for sure. So with that, where am I going to put it now? Kind of a big decision. We have two other games on the quest log with fire in the name. One on the main quest, one on the side quest.
I guess I don't remember what has fire in the name on the quest log. I'm so bad about it if I'm not looking at the quest log.
I mean, I wouldn't blame you for not knowing because it's very early. We got Last Campfire on the main quest.
Oh, okay.
Gunfire Reborn on the side quest.
Oh, Gunfire Reborn.
Okay.
Yeah. But for me, it's a main quest game. I mean, it's a classic for a reason, right? I love this game. I went back and revisited it, and I gained an even deeper appreciation this time. I gave a shout-out to this on Polykill, and I'll give a shout-out to people here. Even if you've never played the game before, they went back and they added a developer commentary mode. So in replaying, you can get like a lot of insight into a lot of the stuff we discussed here, you know, the little dumb problems you have to solve, cool decisions that were made that made moments more impactful. And so if you're like a game designy type of person, it was really fascinating to play that. And I left that thinking like, damn, this game is as good as I thought it was. And you can tell from how like passionate they are about it. So not that any developer out there is not passionate about the game that they make, but it helps when I already love the game so freaking much. So
it's Campo Santo, right? That's who made that game.
Campo Santo.
And they
Santo.
Got bought up by Valve, and they're like not going to make another game ever. And they announced an amazing looking game, and yeah.
Yeah, they announced a game called In the Valley of Gods, which looked really good.
Yeah, that one.
And they like, I don't know if Campo Santo proper got absorbed by Valve, but a lot of the talent went on mm-hmm. and worked at Valve, and they ended up working on things like Half-Life Alyx. So will we ever get another game from them? Probably not. So time to appreciate Firewatch, because that's probably going to be a one and done.
Awesome. I know it's one of Trav's favorites, so that's
it. Yeah, it's on the main quest in spite of that. That's true.
It's definitely one of the ones, like, it's like a Celeste, where we're like, oh yeah, this is going to be on the main quest or side quest. It's going to be on the quest log eventually, just a matter of time.
Yep.
Right.
And here we are. So who's next? Awesome. Someone else tell me about a video game.
You want to go, Josh?
I can go.
Okay.
Yeah, I can go. Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
Or do I always go in the middle? I feel like I usually... it doesn't matter. Okay.
It doesn't matter to me.
I brought a game for the quest log here called... This is actually the beat tweet you guys wrote on Polykill. It's Bakura. B-O-K-U-R-A. Or Bakura. However you pronounce that. I don't know. I don't know what the studio... I think there might be Japanese.
I want to jump in very, very briefly, Josh, and say... I recently purchased that game, and this is probably the closest we've been to bringing the same game, because I was staring at it hard, thinking about bringing it to...
Did you already play it, or have you
played it? No, I haven't played it yet, but I know it's short, right? It's fairly short.
Yeah.
So I was just going to jump into it.
4 hours or so?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were close.
Okay. Well, you've heard of the game, obviously. Steve, yes. Have you heard of this game? Oh, besides the tweet.
Only the beat tweet. I had never heard of or seen it before then.
Okay, cool. So it's a two-player side-scrolling platforming puzzle game. It's co-op only. The cool thing about this is this kind of tells the story of two friends that get lost in the wilderness, and some mystical things start happening. And the creative thing that this does is there are two different art styles, two different OSTs going on, and two different platforming stages to help maneuver each other across. So it's kind of cool. There's like... So I actually played this with my partner in the same room. I had my Steam Deck and they were on the computer, and we kind of played it like that. We had to buy two copies of the game, but it's a cheap game. It's like $4 or something. So we bought two copies and we each played it together in the same room. And I kind of purposely faced away from the screen, because the whole purpose of the game is to try to... So basically, like, tell somebody... I see this platform, but you don't see this platform. Okay, well, I can do this and I can do that. So it's kind of more like a, it's kind of hard to describe, but the one character will have like a cutesy looking, like you're like a bunch of little animals. This is all pixel art. It's really cute and fun pixel art. And then the other person has dystopian like robots. It's literally entirely different graphics and different music, different everything. But that's its whole trick, and it does it pretty well. And so say like there's a platform I have to get up to. I literally see no way to do it, but on my partner's screen, they're playing, they can see like a block that they can only see and push over to me, and then I jump onto it and it might look different than what they're seeing. So there's like a bounty pad that for me looks like a little cage I can bounce on, like a robotic looking cage. To them, it looks like a teddy bear, you know, that you can jump on and land and not get damage. So a lot of this is, there's like whole segments where you can't, like one person can't see anything at all. And literally it's just, okay, you're going to jump left and then you're going to jump now. And then you're going to jump now. Oh, and then you're going to jump now. Okay. A little bit of that.
Because
and then
they can see your character moving. Right.
Yes.
But you can't.
There's special like abilities that each character has. Like the robot can throw his head off, so wherever the head is at, the camera will follow the head only. And the other one, I'm trying to remember. I think the other one has like there's like dogs that will chase after them, and you have to like have that person scare the dog, but the dog can't see the robot, so it's kind of like and it's kind of gross. The cutesy one does a little bit of Happy Tree Friends thing. Cause so if you jump as the robot on top of the dog, like it does like a nice cool little like platform that shoots out of the dog. But on the cutesy screen, it's like disgusting guts and a spinal cord that shoots up. And yeah, so has a little bit of that going on for it. But it's a pretty good game. I actually had a good time playing through it. I do think some of the puzzles are a little like you're both staring at like, what are we supposed to do here? Like you'll sit there for a little bit, kind of agonize on a couple of them until you finally figure it out. It's not as fun if you're like, here, look at the screen. It was nice to just, it's kind of made to be played over online, you know, with somebody else. So like, you know, over the internet, cause then you're just kind of like on a Discord chat or something like, okay, I'm seeing this. What are you seeing? And it's kind of like trying to, out communicate the other person, I guess, to get through these puzzles. And yeah, I had a good time with it. It's not a very long game. It's like 3 to 4 hours. The story is okay. I think that the translation isn't too great because the dialogue kind of just falls a little flat for me at times. I'm like, yeah, this is like a kind of cool idea for a story, but the dialogue just like kind of like meh, you know what I mean? Just to be honest,
is it a little bit too literal? I found that when the dialogue isn't very good, it's because it's like too literal. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like, it's just very things that people don't really say, you know what I mean? Like maybe you might read it in like a kid's story kind of, but it's not really well translated. I'll say that's one of my biggest gripes with the game, but I do think the gameplay and like the whole concept and conceit of it is pretty interesting and worth experiencing. So any questions about the game so far?
It makes me think of, Seth, what was that Rusty Lake game? The Past Within. So it reminds me of that. That's the last game I played in this style where it's like, I have imperfect information, you have imperfect information, we have to share. And my experience coming out of Past Within was like, I wish it was a little harder. So how difficult is it with the communication? Are things pretty obvious once you're in the flow of things? Are they too hard? Like, where does it fall on the balance?
I think that the puzzles themselves aren't really that difficult to piece out usually. We actually had a little more like trouble just executing them. Like we can kind of see what we need to do. And then it's just like, okay, we got to do this step and then this step and then this step and then this step. And then we mess up on step three and then we got to redo it. I feel like that is actually quite a bit of the game is like, okay, we know what we got to do. We just got to execute this perfectly. And it's a little frustrating because of that communication thing. Like, I'm not really sure where I need to be jumping right now because I can't see you know, things like that. Yeah.
That's a strange thing with a platformer, you know, there's a platform. And what do you say? 3.5 pixels in front of you that you need to jump to. Like, that's, you know, whereas with the Past Within, It was very much pretty obvious for the other side. It's just a matter of I need to get the communication out to get them to do this. But it's a puzzle game, not a platform.
Yeah.
I would say the thing they hide the most isn't really like I need to jump to an invisible platform. It's more like I'm walking and I fall into a pit, but it looks like I'm walking across like a flat plane and I'm falling into a pit that I can't see and I don't know what I'm doing in here. And you have to describe like, okay, how do I get out of this pit? Things like that.
Okay.
So, I mean... That's kind of the conceit of the game. I think they do a good job, I would say maybe 80% of the time with that. And then the other 20% of the time, it's kind of like, we kind of had to like fudge our way through this a little bit. Like we figured it out, but it was kind of like, okay. But, and then we did have one glitch in the game. There's like a chain that one of the characters has to climb up and it was just like not connecting. We're like, what is going on? Like we know what we got to do, but this chain, we can't climb this chain. And it was really frustrating. I'll be honest with you. If you guys play the game, you'll know exactly what puzzle we're talking about. But besides that, it's an indie game. I could tell that, you know, they probably needed a little more time in QA to like, you know, go through some of these things. But all in all, I actually come out the other side of it, enjoying the story. I thought the actual gameplay was fun. For the most part, and obviously the way I'm talking about it, it sounds like it's probably going to be a side quest game, right? But, you know, it's still a really interesting experience. I thought it was worth bringing the show and just talking about because this is something that we kind of wanted to play for a really long time. We just saw it, I think it probably like 6 or 8 months ago, and, you know, we just picked it up. And, well, we'll get to it sometime. We finally did. And I came out the other side of it having a good time and not regretting my decision to play it.
Did you ever You may have, and I just totally missed it while I was looking at these screenshots, which it is a very pretty game. I feel like both sides are pretty. Obviously, the animal side is more colorful and the robot side is more, you know, grays and browns and stuff, but it still looks good. But did you ever mention the music?
So they have two different OSTs, like really. The music's good. It's a chiptune-y. It's very... It's pleasant. I would say both sides are good. Obviously, the dystopian one has more of a darker bent to it. It has a little bit of minor keys going on and things like that. The sound effects are more robotic, you know, when you're doing things. In the cutesy side, you can kind of hear, like, it kind of sounds like a nice chiptune-y, like, Zelda theme almost. It's really, like, positive and uplifting. And, you know, you feel like you're in Kakarika Village or something the whole time. But then, like I said, it has that kind of grotesque side to it. I think that it does some cool things with story where there's times where the characters will split up and you both are seeing different parts of the story. So it's kind of like, okay, I'm getting a bunch of information fed to me and I'm seeing this part of the story. And then you hear like your other, you know, your co-op partner going like, what the hell? What is that? Oh my God, I can't believe that just happened, you know? And then as you're doing like the next platforming area, you're kind of like catching each other up on the story, which I thought that was a pretty cool idea. It's like, oh yeah, I saw this and then I saw this. And then you're kind of like trying to piece what's going on in this weird, like, why are we seeing two different things? What's going on? It's cool. I thought it was really well done from that aspect too. And I think as something to, like, you know, play with a co-op partner, it has a lot of interesting ideas.
You know, every time we bring a co-op game up on the show or I hear about or play a co-op game, my first thought is always instantly every time, man, we don't get enough co-op games. And I'm like, when is that?
Yeah.
When is that bucket going to fill up? At what point is someone going to talk about a co-op game and I'm going to be like, finally, there's equilibrium and there are enough co-op games. It feels like there's just been a drought of them. Literally the 30-something years I've been on this planet. Give me more. Yeah,
I feel like that's partially because, for me at least, it's partially because often I am not seeking them out or I see the co-op tag on Steam and I'm like, meh. That's probably not going to be for me, but I have tried at least recently to start to try to play with some other people and actually like have that experience. My question, Josh, so Steve and I played The Past Within a year ago now, and we had said like it would have been interesting to see what the other person was seeing. So would you go back and play the other side and flip flop?
I actually think I would. Because, like, I didn't see some of the story. I think that it'd be kind of cool. Like, I'd probably give it, like, 6 months or something. Maybe we'll play it again later in the year or something like that and have an evening. And, you know, we kind of know what the puzzles are, probably still remember some of the solutions or whatever. But experiencing the other graphics and the other music and the other story, I think, would be cool. I think for what the price is, I think... Generally, the game is like, what, $8? And they always have it on sale. No, it's $5.49 usually, and right now it's on sale for $3. You know, it's a super cheap game for what you get out of it. I think it's really worth the price, especially if you both buy it or, you know, hey, I'm going to buy a gift for my friend and we're going to play this together. You spend less than $10 and you're going to have a good time. But yeah, I do think that both sides are interesting enough and the mechanics are different enough. Like, there are whole segments where you're split up for a good amount of time and it's like I have no idea what I'm even looking at right now, because like that's a good reason I brought that robot head thing up, because like there's a whole time where I'm just seeing the robot head and I'm just sitting there like as the robot head controlling my body that I can't see. So it'd be kind of cool to see the other side of that, you know.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, so it's a really cool game. I think it's interesting. It's co-op. I wanted to bring something a little unique to the show, and I think this is a side quest. It's like it's one of those like prototypical side quests. Like there's a few things I can nitpick if I really want to, but I do think that if any of it sounded interesting, I say give it a shot. Kind of get through some of the little bit of jank in it. It has a little bit of jank, but get through that, and you'll probably have a good time with your friend for 3 or 4 hours. So good time.
Nice. It reminds me a little bit of similar genre and stuff, but of Voyage. I brought Voyage a while ago, played that with my wife, and you're not playing two different games at the same time with each other, but still that puzzle platformer, you know, that type of thing where you're kind of working together to get through levels. So yeah, that's I had a good time with that. I'm sure I'd have a good time with this, and I'll have to play it soon.
Yeah, I definitely added it to my wish list. So it sounds like it'd be perfect for you're just in the mood to chill and, you know, do some kind of like light interactivity with a buddy or with a partner. I'm for it.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's a worth a pickup, especially since it's so cheap. It does the honestly feel like this thing is kind of this this is becoming a trope with indie games. It has the vocalized song at the end that's all melancholy sounding. I feel like that's happened a lot lately with indie games. Maybe it's just because we're playing lots of Freebird games last year or whatever, but you know, it's kind of a thing that I've noticed. Like they did it on Space for the Unbound, and I think they did that for Cassette Beast too, right?
There's a lot of vocals in Cassette Beast.
It's kind of a thing that's happening. I do think the story is kind of, it's okay, but it has some cool ideas, and I think it's worth checking out just because of it's just so unique and different than anything else.
Very
cool. So that's Bakura. That's the best I can pronounce it. Bakura is from the South or whatever. Bokura. That's how you spell that, and it's a side quest game. So
nice, dude.
Seth, you're the last one here today.
I am the last one. This is weird. I feel like I never go last. I try to get my turn out of the way so like the suspense is over with and I can just enjoy you guys talking through your games while I'm just kicking my feet up. But here we go. All right. So I think, did you say when Bakura, did that come out last year? I think it was like last year, right?
Yeah, I think it was 2023 game. Yeah, August 2023.
Yep. Nice. So then that means I am the only one today who brought a game that released in 2024. I feel like last year at this time I had played a few because I made it my goal last year to play as many as I could throughout the year. That's not necessarily as big of a goal this year. I'm going to play as many as I can and go back and experience what I missed in the past as well. But I saw this one as I was perusing Steam one day, and I think I found it organically. I don't think I saw it in a review video or anything. I think I just saw it in the Steam shop, and I think it was on sale. And I'll say that this is not my typical genre to play, but it is associated with a bingo square, which is good.
Well, there we go. There we go.
Nice.
I played a little game called Little Guardsman. Have you guys ever heard of Little Guardsman?
Little Guardsman. No, but I do like a game that has Lil in the name, so you have my attention.
Take a peek at that old thing while I start to talk about when it came out. So it came out this year, January 23rd. It was developed by Versus Evil and Tiny Build. Tiny Build, you might recognize the two of you both played a game from Tiny Build. Do you remember what that might be? I will give a hint. It has Tiny in the title as well.
Tiny Kin.
And if you guys are looking at Little Guardsman, you might notice that there's definitely some similarities with Tinykin in the art style. Not obviously all of it. The backgrounds aren't the same, but it's the character design is very similar to Tinykin, or at least I thought, right? The big eyes, the 2000s cartoon.
Yeah, 2000s cartoon. This looks like some... This looks like something Frantic would be bringing, okay?
It's like Foster's Home for
imaginary
kids or something. Or like Fairly Odd Parents or something, yeah.
I have Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends written down on my notes, so I'm so happy you said that, Josh. That is just, awesome.
Is that just because it gives you strength to carry on, or do you always put that in your notes?
Every single time. I just hope Josh will say it, yeah. But I put down 2000s Cartoon Network because this is...
Yeah.
This is 2000s Cartoon Network ass. Platform for everyone out there. The nice thing about this is it is on PC, which I would recommend playing it on PC because it's very much a point and click. But it is also on Switch, PS4, PS5, Xbox, everything that came out in the last two generations. So you can find it on any console that you currently own or PC, I would imagine. I would like to hear how it plays with a controller. It's certainly not completely necessary to play with a mouse. It's probably as necessary. We were talking about Balatro earlier. Josh, I don't know if you played Balatro on PC or on your Steam Deck.
I played it on PC. I tried it touchscreen and with the controller. So okay. It works good always, I think, that game to me.
I bought that game twice because my my boys will take over the PS5, and I originally bought it on PS5 so I could play it on TV, but then I'm like, I want to still play Bellatro, so I bought it on computer. But it feels good on controller, feels fine on mouse. Yeah. I'm sure that's how Little Guardsman is too.
I gotta say, dude, I'm so excited for you to tell me more about this game in the next couple minutes, because I'm looking at these screenshots and I have no idea what the hell type of game this is. Like, I don't even know the genre.
What am I watching? Technically point and click.
The tags are funny because it's like adventure, casual comedy, female protagonist. And at the very last one, it says political. And I'm like, what? So I don't know.
It is. That is too funny. I guess it is political. And I think what they're doing, there is politics involved for sure. But I think what they're doing is comparing it to a different game, which I will get into. Should I get into it right now? I guess we can talk about it. In my overview, I will say, it is a choice-based point-and-click adventure, and I was going to talk about the comparison later, a game that you guys both might have played, but it is very, very similar, and even they say takes inspiration from Papers, Please. Papers, Please?
That has been one of the longest indie games on my backlog forever.
Yeah. Do you guys understand the point of Papers, Please, I guess?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yep, definitely.
Okay. So the gameplay of Little Guardsman is, I would say, the focal point. I'm going to save that for the end. I'm going to run through everything else first, and then we'll get to that towards the end here. But we talked about the presentation, what it looks like. I think that the looks of this game, slightly behind gameplay, are basically what you're in it for. It's certainly what drew me to this game, just seeing it sit in the Steam shop or seeing some trailers of it before I decided to buy it. It is a very good looking, especially if you're of our age, cool game.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're into that cartoon aesthetic that you would have seen in the 2000s, like we mentioned at the top. But the character portraits are super good. The expressions are great. It is set in a medieval time, but with modern flair. It's strange. Everybody wears mostly medieval clothing, and there's castles, and you're tending a guard shed for people trying to get into your kingdom. But then there's Lil wearing like a sweater with a heart stitched on it. You know,
like, there's like a telephone just sitting on this counter here.
There's
like
a telephone. Mm. There's a lot of high tech gadgets. And I don't know if you guys look through screenshots, but you can see a picture of Lil's room.
Yeah.
And it looks like a stone dungeon, but there's posters of like boy bands on the wall and sports. So it's very much set in that medieval time, but it has all the modern trimmings that we expect in from today. Right. So very cool. The story, you play as Lilith technically, but everyone calls her Lil. You basically take over for your dad at the guard shed. He has a little bit of a gambling problem, so he goes down to the Goblin Ball Arena to place bets every day, and he convinces you that you need to work in his place so he can go down and place a bet the first day. And you do a good enough job on that first day that not only does he want you to keep going back, but then other people that you've talked to on your first day on the phone or whoever, right? We'll get into that in some of the gameplay. They also want you to keep doing it for various reasons. So that's kind of the, at least the beginning of why you're in that guard shed in the first place. I don't want to get too much into it because the story goes places. I don't want to spoil anything. I will say, Josh, you mentioned political. It does get political in certain ways. There's a princess. There are suitors for said princess that you have to kind of vet, right? But it's very interesting. And then, of course, in this type of setting, you probably expect that there will be some sort of battle or war at some point. I will say that that also happens. And you're a 12-year-old girl that has no reason to be involved in all this stuff, but that's part of the comedy of it. It's a very witty, funny game. Had me smiling. There are parts where I'm reading or I'm listening to the voice actors and had me, you know, basically chuckle out of nowhere, right? It catches you off guard with its humor and wit. So it's very, very funny. All right. I think that brings me to what I would say is the music, the audio. The music is very good, very chill most of the time. I would say it's like a chill but also funky vibe, right? So it's kind of upbeat, but mostly, you know, pretty slow. Not, you're not going to be rocking to anything. You're not going to be banging your head at any point. And it certainly fits the gameplay well when I get there. If anybody's ever played Papers, Please, they probably understand a little bit of what the gameplay is going to be or ever seen anything about it. But yes, very chill, but very nice. Certainly great to listen to while studying or working. I've done that a little bit since playing this game. I mentioned voice actors. Every single line of dialogue, practically every single line of dialogue is voiced in this game. The amount of voice actors,
I was surprised. I actually thought it would be just like dialogue, yeah, like same. Dialogue that you read. Yeah.
No, huh. Every single character is voiced, I will say, for better or for worse. I'm not saying none of the, I would say that none of the voice actors were bad. They were all good. But it's an indie game, and there were certain times where two people were in conversation, and you could very much tell that one person was recording in some room at home that didn't have very good sound deadening and was a little echoey. They're both standing in the exact same tavern, for example, and one person's audio is echoey and the other person's audio is not. So it's a little, it's, I probably only pick up on it because of us doing this type of thing, right? That your average gamer maybe doesn't hear it, but it is a little distracting, right? To hear, you know, most people come to a podcast and they think, okay, I'm in Ohio, Steve's in Minnesota, Josh is in Washington, but a lot of people will come to a podcast and they want to get that, oh, these are three bros hanging out in a room talking video games, right? And that's what we all like to think, too, that that's what's happening. That's what you want to get out of these kinds of games, too. Yeah. There, you see the two characters interacting. I want them to sound like they're in the same place, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to fault this game, but yeah.
There's a game I played last year and brought to the side quest was Stray Gods, the musical game.
Yes.
It had a very similar thing where it was like you can tell there was three or four different recording spaces that these three characters were recording in, because that one was recorded over COVID and things, you know, so it was kind of like not in the same room and, you know, intercut between the two characters and things like that. So I've experienced something like that. So I understand that can be a little jarring if you're expecting the character to sound like they're in the same thing, you know.
Well, yeah, and this is a tangent a little bit, but I've looked for mics, you know, in the past, and you look at reviews for mics, and there's a lot of people who buy mics who are voice actors, and they want their mic to be as good as possible so they could do it from home. There's a lot of voice actors doing all their voice work at their house. And so, of course, people want it to sound as crisp as possible. And there's so much you can do in the editing process, but you can't do everything. So, you know, there's just, it's a little slightly distracting, right? It's not anything to be like, oh, this game is terrible because of it, but it's a little distracting. I will say, I said it already, the voice actors are all excellent. Honestly, they all give the right emotion to everything, and they do a really good job. Okay. Before we jump into gameplay, you guys have any questions about the story or the presentation or anything I've talked about so far?
No. I mean, dude, honestly, I feel like the idea of a Papers, Please style game without the really intense story, without the like design to make you bummed out is kind of like, it feels obvious in retrospect. It's like, yeah, of course. And yet it also feels like a very fresh twist on like a proven idea. So kudos to them. Very smart.
It's like a kids version of Papers, Please, basically, kind of, sort of, yeah.
So it's funny say that, Josh, because I saw a review that said, oh, this is like a family-friendly Papers, Please.
It's Papers, Please.
Yeah, kind of. I will warn anyone who wants to play this with their below, I would say, teenagers. There is cursing, no doubt. A lot of it is bleeped out. And I already mentioned the humor, but there's a lot of the humor is like very 2020s coded. You know, how you can go back and play a game like Guacamelee or something where it's like, oh, this is meme culture from the mid-2010s.
Yep.
A lot of this I can see aging somewhat poorly into several years from now, potentially, right? Like that's how I was feeling. And I'm sure the kids would get a good laugh out of it, but it's teenagers, I'd say, yes, great. Below teenagers, the art style lends itself to it, but it's a little too much, I think, for
almost,
me personally.
Almost PG-13, okay. Right?
It's pretty, yeah, I would say way. It's a PG-13 game. Rated E10, yeah. But watch yourself, like that type of thing.
Not okay. to like distract us too much, but isn't it weird how fast comedy changes over time, yeah, right? Like it was like crazy. Barely a decade ago that it was like Velociraptor and like the baby doing the fist memes and stuff. And now what even is those would get laughed out of town if you tried posting one of those on Twitter.
Yeah. I was going through some of my old writings last night because I was just getting a little nostalgic, you know. Oh, yeah, you know, with some high school writings. And there was this is such a tangent, but whatever. There was this writing prompt I had to do in creative writing, which was tell a tall tale. So my tall tale was about this guy named Bob that met Chuck Norris. And I was a Chuck Norris joke. This is so dated. You know what I mean? Like, like who would make a Chuck Norris joke in 2024? I don't know. Oh, but, you know, it was from 09, you know? So.
Right. Yeah. That was so popular back then. Like how many things can we think of that Chuck Norris could beat up and it would be funny? Like that was the meme back then.
He has a fist underneath his beard because he's so powerful.
Seriously. All right. Well, that will lead me into what I would say is the primary point of playing Little Guardsmen, which I guess is a good thing. Art style is great, but the gameplay is what you're coming here for. We already mentioned it's similar to Papers, Please, but I will explain. There are two main, I would say, portions or gameplay sections of Little Guardsmen. The main one is when you are controlling Lil at the guard shed. So you get down there. And you start to kind of learn all the different tools that you can use. So every day you enter the guard shed, there is a list on the wall that will give you a set of rules, right? It'll say, hey, if you see this type of person, then this should happen. If you see this type of person, then this should happen. And you kind of have to follow those rules. I guess I should back up and say, okay, you're in a guard shed where people come up to the guard shed and want to get admitted into the kingdom. So everybody comes up and they're like, oh, they give you a couple short sentences. They'll talk and you listen. Here's what I need to do. This is why I need you to let me through. Then you have all the rules from the different council members, which I'll talk about in a moment, that kind of say, hey, do this, do that. If you see this type of person, this is who you should contact. If you see this type of person, watch out, that type of thing, right? You have 3 action points for every single person. And you can basically choose to do 3 things with every person that comes to the shed. Looking at the rules is not one of those things. You can, number one, talk to the person again. They'll give you a couple brief pieces of information, but it doesn't really help you. Usually does not help you determine whether they should get in. There are select occasions where it will. An example of that is, I'm in a serious hurry. I need to get in there because of blah, blah, blah. In order to do as well as possible, you might need to let that person through without doing any more investigation into their person. That could burn you because they could be lying. So you kind of have to do that judgment call right away. But you can talk to them again to get more information from them. You can use the telephone that Steve was referring to be able to call 3 different people, Stryker, Ash, and Malcolm. They are basically the royals' advisors, I guess. So they give the princess advice, and they're also giving the guardsmen advice based on the people that are trying to come through. You'll call Stryker if you're looking at somebody that might be in trouble with the law because she's like a military head. You'll call Ash if the person seems magical at all because she's like the leader of the Mages Guild. And you'll call Malcolm. I didn't call Malcolm very often because he's like the court jester, but he can give you like wacky phrases that often he can predict things. So sometimes Malcolm is when I have no idea what to do. I'll just call Malcolm And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm reading tarot cards today, and I predict that this is going to happen. And he's usually right, right? So you can kind of, he can give you the hint to be able to do that.
It just, it seems like that guy's voiced by Jack Black, the way you're describing him. Anyway,
oh, he is. Sorry. Yeah, he is very, yeah. Then the other main thing that you can do, which is the thing that you want to preserve as much as possible, but you need to use liberally, is there is a brown cabinet on the wall that houses five different tools in the guard shed. There are a decipher ring, which basically allowed you to decode messages if you were to see a message. Either they're carrying a letter and they're not sure what it's for, or maybe a character has tattoos on their body in a foreign language. You can use the decoder ring to be able to figure that out. There's a metal detector, which is exactly what it is. It's basically a wand that will tell you if they have anything metal on them, and then they present that item. Cool thing about metal detector and a tool that I'll get to shortly is when you look at those items that they have on their person, you can choose to confiscate it, which could bring good things, could bring bad things. A lot of times, if they have it on them, they want to take it with them, but sometimes they'll be like, here you go, you can just take it. And the nice thing about that is you can actually sell that stuff later to get more money to improve your guard shed. There is an x-ray, which is the other thing, kind of like the metal detector, but it x-rays their entire body. And oftentimes somebody will be coming in with a cart or will very clearly be a sewn together something, animal or something. It's like, okay, that's two people in there. So I'm going to use the x-ray to figure out that there's actually two people in there and they're trying to get up to something no good, right? So that's why you would use the x-ray. There is the truth spray, which I used as much as possible, and I'll get to it, but you can level all these tools up. Truth spray is basically you spray this perfume-looking bottle at the person who came to the guard shed, and they are forced to tell the truth. Seems kind of broken,
yeah.
But there are a lot of characters, especially magic characters, that you spray the truth spray at them, and they'll be like, oh, simple truth spray doesn't work on me. You know, that type of thing. Okay. Oh, you suck. and then there's the strangest weapon, the weapon I use the least, but there were certain times where it's like, I have no idea what to do. It's kind of like Malcolm, but it's the bull whip. It's just a whip.
Oh,
I can just whip the crap out of the person. Yes, pretty much. It's like, certain times it was really bad. Certain times it was like, well, I guess I'll use this whip. And it worked out for weird reasons.
There's a dark version of this game where you can play where you're like whipping and confiscating everyone's valuables and selling them to upgrade and improve your own riches.
You can play that way. And I kind of mentioned at the top, this is a choices matter game. You need to, every time you make a decision, not every time, but most times when you just make a pivotal decision in the story, there will be a thing that pops up at the top. And I think I said squall earlier, but it's actually sprawl. But it will say, oh, choices that you made will affect the sprawl story in the future. And that's how it goes, right? I decided to do this. I decided to do that. So it's very much the black and white thing or Fable, right? Like there's everything. Yeah. Well, there's a morality to it all. Speaking of more of the tools, there is a way to upgrade each tool. You can only use each tool a certain amount of times, depending on however many power crystals you have. And then you also have slots for each tool. So kind of like you only have three actions that you can do each day. Each tool, or three actions per person, each tool has up to five slots that you can purchase and then fill with crystals. So I really like the truth spray. So I immediately bought all the slots as soon as I had enough money, bought all of the power crystals that I could, and put them all in the truth spray every time I went down to the guard shed. Somebody else might be like, I really like the x-ray, and they'll buy the x-ray.
Somebody else might be like, I like the whip.
Yes, yeah, it's true. You could totally play that way. And honestly, that's the thing that I love. And it brings me, that's a good point, Josh. It brings me right to the thing I think I love most about this game. A lot of people will play point and click adventure games because they enjoy the challenge, the puzzling aspect of it, right? This is puzzling. You have to figure out what each of these people, you kind of have to look at the person and figure out based on how they look or whether they're wearing a big overcoat or something along those lines, what you should be doing. And the order of stuff that you need to do to try to figure out what they need, whether they need to hit the road or come in. And the cool thing about it is, from what I can tell, every time you either call someone or use a tool or talk to the person, there's different dialogue. It's all voiced. It's wild how many lines of dialogue must have been voiced for this game. And the other thing is, I like a game where I feel like I can make more than one choice.
Yeah.
Like with so many point and clicks, I found a stick at the very beginning of the game and a piece of rope. And for whatever reason, I have to tie a chicken to this rope at the right time at midnight and go down to the castle. And it turns out that I had to get a piece of information from a villager where the guard is only there at midnight, but he's deathly afraid of chickens. And like, you have to figure all that out and tie the chicken to the rope and be under the bridge and scare the guard off. Like, I feel like in this game, I can make so many different choices and still get a good score. Right, I can choose to use this tool over this tool, or talk to this person instead of this person, and I'm still using the rules for the most part and trying to follow along with what I need to do. But sometimes I would want to just screw around, see what happened if I use something different.
Do you get immediate feedback when you let someone in or don't? Like, is there a correct answer, and do you immediately know, like, oh, you just let in a criminal, bro? You just messed up.
So, yes, that brings me to kind of the main point of the whole guard shed is you get ratings for each and every person. It is a 3-star rating, but most people you can let in actually have 3 stars and then what seems to be like a medal. So 3 stars is good. That's what you want to get for most people. But if you can do the almost exact, or you get to the, let's say somebody was carrying a knife that they were planning on stabbing somebody once I got in, and you used the metal detector and found that knife and you confiscated it and said, hit the road, buddy. Well, that might have been the exact thing you were supposed to do. So then you get the 3 stars plus the bonus 4th.
Okay.
And that's kind of what you want to do. You want to get a four star run for every single person that comes through. That's your perfect game. And you have an achievement for every single chapter or level where if you get a 4-star for everybody, you get that achievement. Right? That's the point. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to do. So, that's pretty much the guard shed. Do you guys have any other questions about the guard shed itself, that portion? No. Okay. The other part is more traditional point and click. You can walk around as Lil and go to different locations around the sprawl, talk to different people at the tavern, go to into the castle, go to the dungeon, and just talk to random people. Learn different pieces of information. A lot of it is, there are puzzles that you can kind of do, but a lot of it is fetch quest. Hey, I need this item if you want this thing. So you need to go, there's somebody out there that probably has this thing that I need. So then you go and you go across the map and you find that person, get the thing, go back. Well, actually, I want this thing too. And then you go somewhere else. So it's very much more traditional adventure point and click. I would say that that's certainly a detraction. I really wanted to, and a lot of that is optional, but I feel like you need to do it to get the full meat of the story. I would say it's a detraction from the main game. A lot of times I just wanted to take Lil back to the tavern and go to bed. And so I could get back up the next day and go back down to the guard shed and play what I know the devs made their main point of their game, but the other stuff was kind of padded. There's a lot of fourth wall breaking stuff too, where they're like, I know that this is, oh, you're sending me on a fetch quest, that type of thing, right? Where they knew what they were doing. Yeah.
It's like when they do like a fake tutorial, like, oh, this tutorial sucks, doesn't it?
Oh, they do so much of that. every time Lil's dad starts talking, Lil kind of like gets this like look on her face and it's like, Dad, we don't need to go through this tutorial. I've been playing this game for 2 hours. Like, she will say that. And then Hamish will be like, well, Lil, you can skip if you like. Like that whole thing where you can skip through the dialogue. But it is, and that's a lot of the 2020s type humor, right? Like, okay, we're very self-aware. We used to enjoy the fact that games got self-aware, but this was like over top self-aware at certain points. But I think that pretty much rounds out everything with Lil Guardsman. Do you guys have any other questions before I throw it on the quest log?
My question is, where are you going to put it on the quest log?
I did have one, just a quick one.
Yeah.
Is there's like a story that runs through the whole thing. And the amount you fail, does that affect the story, or is the story going to play out the same way?
So
is that a spoiler?
No, it isn't. Well, I'm not going to spoil the story, but I will mention, Josh, that you point that you bring a good point that I should have mentioned when I was talking about the guard shed type stuff. So the amount you fail as you progress, you have an average, right? So if you get all 3 stars and you have an average of 3 for that day, and you get a certain amount of money based on your averages, then you can use that money to buy crystals and slots and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There is a point in the game where they will say you must average at 2 stars. You cannot average lower than that. You must average at 2.5 stars. You cannot go lower than that, or you get fired. Basically, Lil dies and you have to reset, right? That whole thing. So you there are, you know, obstacles that you have to overcome at certain points of the game.
Okay.
A pivotal part of what you said is the story, but you get it very early on, is you get this item called the Chronometer 3000. And it basically allows you to go back in time. So if you are on, if you're going through, let's say you have 7 people, you see in the top right corner when you're at the guard shed, there's 7 people you're going to see today. That allows you to manage your tools more effectively. I know coming up that I have 5 more people, so I don't want to blow through all my tools right now. I want to try to figure this out easier, and so I can preserve my stuff for later. If you use the Chronometer 3000, let's say you got a 1 star, you can use that after you finish that person and go back to the beginning of that person and make different choices. But you can only use that 5 times a day. So if you're like, oh, I cannot figure out how to get, I really, really want to get a 4 star on this one, and you use it 3 times on the first person, well, you're going to be hurting potentially later, and you're going to end up being stuck with a 1 star potentially if you made the wrong choice. So,
okay.
You can pick each level if you're an achievement hunter, which I probably will go back and try to get the majority of them or all of them. You can pick each and every level whenever you want to. So if you knew you got not all 4 stars in level 4, you can go back to level 4 and retry, which is nice.
Okay.
Nice. All right. I think that will bring me to my verdict. I will be putting Lil Guardsman on the side quest. It was a very, very hard choice. It was right on the border. I think that it could be a main quest for certain people. I will say that at least on PC, I feel like this wouldn't happen on console, but at least on PC, I had to deal with this issue where every time I booted up the game, and I know this isn't necessarily the game's fault, it's more of the development process or whatever, or maybe it's, I don't think it's just me because I looked it up and there are other people that have similar issue. Every time I booted up the game, it would crash within 3 minutes.
Oh, that's a bummer.
That sucks.
The game would kill itself. It would kill Steam for some reason. And I would have to basically control, delete, task, kill Steam, boot Steam back up, and then play the game every time. So if I shut my computer down, I would have to do this every single time I decided to play Lil Guardsman. And I beat it in probably 4 or 5 sittings. You know, it's an 8 to 9 hour game. I think if you're rushing through it and you're not trying to do any extra stuff, you could probably do it in about 7. But you know, it was a little annoying. The voice acting was a little annoying, how it could be, you know, varied at certain points. And it's a very chatty game sometimes. You like that there's a lot of voice acting, but I can tell you, I might have only listened to like 80% of it at a certain point because, okay, I get it. I'm clicking through. I'm just reading it before they can say it, right? So
yeah,
it would have taken me even longer at certain points. And that's not, you know, you're going to have voice acting. You can't make the voice actors talk fast. Like, it makes total sense why they did that. Just was minorly annoying to me. The big thing, and I think the biggest reason it's on a side quest for me, is because I don't feel like the typical regular point and click stuff, it's just too much of a detraction from what you want to get back to. The shed is, you want to be in that guard shed. You want to do that. That's the fun part. And that's, unfortunately, I feel like it's almost like 60-40. 60% guard shed, 40% the other stuff. And I would much prefer it to be like 80-20, right? Like, I'm fine with some of that stuff to develop the story, but I want to be in that shed. That's the point of the game. That's the fun thing. So, but yeah, that's a Lil Guardsman. Good game. Everyone should check it out.
Nice.
Heck yeah.
I did see that it's on Switch as well, so maybe it would have nice touchscreen support on like handheld mode. That would be a nice way to play it, maybe.
Oh,
that won't crash on you. you know?
Right. It, as long as it does, yes, I think it would be great. For I feel like it's like weirdly optimized for PC because every time I would play this game, you look at it and it's like, what is going on in this game that would make my laptop sound like it was about to go through the roof? I don't understand. I've played Elden Ring and it didn't make it sound like that. So it's just, I don't know. Yeah. It's weird.
It's just queuing up 1,000 MP3s to play all the dialogue.
That could be. That is a lot of extra audio in there. Yeah, that has something to do with it, I'm sure. But
it has like 7 instances of Winamp in the background just going. Yeah. I don't know.
There's got to be like 7 hours worth of dialogue in this game. It's wild.
Damn.
All right.
Really unique game, man. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
What a spread today, boys. We brought 3 bangers again.
We did.
Proud of us.
Mm-hmm. So it was Firewatch, main quest, Valkura, side quest, and Little Guardsman, side quest. Go check out the quest log at bit.ly/questlog to see the over 100 games on there, I think, at this point.
Well, all over, bangers. Yeah. All bangers. And today was another good day to slowly work us towards main and side quest equilibrium.
Yeah.
We don't plan it that way. We're not trying to keep them in equilibrium, but there is something satisfying to see them move a little closer to being in life.
I feel like your resolution this year, Steve, has been to just bring, you've brought a couple older games. You're like, yeah, this is a main quest for me. I'm totally picking up that Blink main quest energy on these. So I'm not the side quest boy anymore.
It's true. I've been bringing them. You wait for future episodes. I think that you may notice that trend continues.
Oh, nice. Perfect.
Oh. Well, I think that's going to do it for our show today. You can find the show at IndieQuestPod on Twitter. You can find our email. We actually did get, not an email, but we got a Spotify comment. We can mention that in a second. IndieQuestPod@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, if you have any comments for the video for the podcast, go over to Spotify. There's a comment section, which is really cool. We actually got a suggestion for a track. Well, I forget what the album was, but it was cool. I was actually listening to that today. So check that out.
I've got it right here, Josh. You want me to just read it quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So we got it from, we've done this before. I feel like I read this username before, but Paleona, I believe. And they said, an obscure indie soundtrack I would recommend is Hypnagogia, I think, Boundless Dreams. Check out the tracks Dream Nexus theme, Ice Space World theme, etc. Very varied and cool game.
Yeah, the game looks cool as hell. Also, the soundtrack is free on Steam. So if you want to, if you're really into it, you can go get it for free.
That's Heck cool. Yeah.
So yeah, do that. Spotify. We definitely read them. We share them in our Discord and our little group chat and always have a conversation about them. And it's really nice just to see people interacting with the podcast, which we appreciate. So, Steve, where can they find you on the interweb?
Twitch and Twitter is Blinkum, Blink OOM. How about you, Seth?
You can find me at Captain Drachma on Twitter. And of course, in the Polymedia Discord, best place on the internet. And if you want to get into that Discord, head on over to your local Patreon and type in Polymedia. You'll find us. Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me at Frantic Society on Twitter. And you can find more awesome shows in our wonderful network, which you mentioned, Polymedia Network. It's at polymedianetwork.com. We have a bunch of podcasts over there, nostalgia-tinged video games, movies, you name it. We're probably going to be talking about it. One I wanted to mention... What was the one I wanted to mention? You guys go first. One of you guys go first. I had one on the tip of my tongue.
I'll go because I saw a little Patreon birdie drop it today. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite movies of all time is Top Gun. And our boys over at the Uncle Doug podcast, Trav and Kev, just did an episode on Top Gun. And I started listening to it today. And I will say, within the first 30 minutes, I was dying. So everyone should go check out that if they enjoy movies and enjoy some comedy sprinkled in.
I remember what it was. It was Off Kilter. They did a St. Patrick's Day episode.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. That's the fun, just random off the cuff, just ridiculous show where they just talk about whatever. it's a good time. I always get a lot, like, many laughs from it, and it's seasonal, so you only get it like when there is a holiday. So St. Patrick's Day was a really nice listen.
Got to be the only podcast on that schedule. On what on a random holiday is. Last one I'll send you towards is a show that needs more love. Tales of the Lesser Medium, which is a great comedy show breaking down the stories of some of your favorite video games. So please, go give it a listen.
Find all that and more at polymedianetwork.com. Steve, why don't you close out the show today and give some parting words for the listeners out there?
Yeah. I hope everyone is going to enjoy some high-quality indie video games. But if you want to enjoy them to the fullest, you need to be in good health. So here's my advice to you, okay? You go out, you go to the mall, you go pick up your kid from daycare. Wash your hands afterwards. Wash your kid's hands afterwards. Bring some hand sanitizer, because otherwise you're going to sound like me all freaking episode with a freaking frog in my throat. All right, video games are the best. Goodbye.
See ya.